Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears on WWGH 107.1 FM. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears coming at you here on a Getaway Friday, November the 18th, 2022. 13 coming up on 14 minutes past the hour, and it certainly is a Getaway Friday, last Friday before the big Thanksgiving holiday. Now, there is an announcement I want to make here, and I want to make this as many times as I can this morning. The Richland Road Church of Christ, located at 535 Richland Road here in Marion, is doing their monthly food giveaway tomorrow, Saturday, November the 19th. The church will be giving away, now are you ready for this, 43,000 pounds of food. That is right, 43,000 pounds of food. Included are 385 turkeys. So if you are in need of a turkey and don't think you can afford one this year, tomorrow at the Richland Road Church of Christ is the place to go. It is first come, first serve. The parking lot opens up at 8 a.m. and the doors around 9 a.m., if not sooner. 43,000 pounds of food tomorrow morning, Richland Road Church of Christ, November 19th. 385 turkeys as well, and we're going to mention that all morning this morning here on the station. Also want to let you know, coming up next hour, I know all of you here in Ohio and around the country are in a craze because the Christmas classic, A Christmas Story, the 1983 classic, The Christmas Story House up in Cleveland, Ohio, now has a sequel, is the best way to put it, A Christmas Story Christmas. Now, I'm not going to give it away, but next hour we have something that's going to be very interesting to do with that movie, which is on HBO Max, starting last night, November 17th. So now that all the housekeeping's out of the way, we have 45 minutes here with one of my favorite people, and it's interesting because I have to say, this person has never been on the show, but it's a guest I've wanted to have on for a long, long time. We have had a lot of people from Columbus Media on this show, but this gentleman has had a very interesting life, and let's just start here. 45 years in the broadcast industry, 39 years at WBNS Television. He's been a minister, a chaplain. He is a minister. What an interesting life, and what a pleasure it is to welcome to these microphones for the first time the legendary, and he is that if you go to anybody around Marion, Columbus, or Central Ohio, Jerry Revish. Jerry, how are you?
Good morning, Scott. I'm doing well, and my goodness, what an introduction there. Thank you, sir.
good to speak with you. Good to finally get you on the program. As we head into Thanksgiving, what does this holiday mean to you?
Well, this holiday means to me, thanks, and for so many things. Top of mind right now, I heard you mention the United Church of Christ getting ready to donate hundreds of thousands of pounds of food and more than 300 turkeys. We're going to be doing something similar, but on a much smaller scale, ourselves on this coming Monday. And I am so thankful for the members of Unity Temple, Church of God in Christ, where I pastor, and they're stepping up to help us help others. I think we all need to stop for a moment and just thank God for every blessing that he's given us. When you think about here we are in this post-pandemic period, and we've lost so many loved ones, even if your own personal family is intact, you know somebody who lost somebody during the COVID years. And now we're on the backside of that, and we can look back and thank God for all of the things that he blessed us to endure and come through. And so Thanksgiving means a lot of things. We'll be sitting down with the family here on Thanksgiving, my son and daughter and my grandkids and some other guests that we're going to have over at the house, and just enjoy the day. I just love Thanksgiving and Christmas, as a matter of fact.
You know, Jerry, it's very interesting because we are on the back end of the pandemic. You left your position right before the pandemic in the news industry. How do you think you would have handled that story? A huge, huge, huge story.
It was a huge story. I came out in November of 2019, and if I recall, the following March is when Governor DeWine shut down the whole state, and our church was shut down there too. Although we had been live streaming before COVID, it came in handy during COVID because everybody was at home. I would go out on Sunday morning, myself and a couple of others, to the church and preach from an empty sanctuary out to people at home. But as far as my professional career in broadcasting was concerned, I was glad to be out of the business at that time, honestly. It was so awkward for everybody to have to get around and do those stories. As you saw, people were broadcasting on laptops from their kitchen or their den or living room, and it was just, it wasn't really great TV, for one thing. It looked really bad. And this video was minimal. Photographers were having a hard time. Our photographers there at Channel 10, during the pandemic, they weren't even allowed to come into the building to edit their video. They had to do it on laptops in their cars. It was an amazing time. And the reporters were doubly hampered in doing their job, having to keep that six-foot distance between you and the person you're interviewing and wearing masks at all times. It was just very, very difficult. But the news persevered, and they did a really good job considering what they had to work with. It was a really difficult time for everybody. And as you see now, we still have a lot on TV of different remote interviews on laptops. You still see that image, and you still hear that crackly audio sometimes. But that's the new age we're in. But, you know, the news has been able to adapt to it as best it can, and we're continuing on. So, but circling back around originally to your question, it would have been a very, very difficult job for me, but I've had difficult jobs throughout my career. So I'm sure I would have been able to survive that and do that job and make it happen.
You know, Jerry, what do you make in the church, in the broadcast industry, radio, television, of this new digital age? For a while, it seemed like it was running neck and neck, but it certainly seems the COVID era pushed the digital age way ahead of maybe the analog digital television radio age. What do you make of that?
Yeah, well, it has. And I think, you know, we've had to adapt to it, and we're just in a much more digital age than we were prior to COVID. Of course, we've been, you know, doing digital things for a long time now, but even more so because of the pandemic. Speaking of church life, most of the members have come back for in-person church on Sunday mornings at 11 a.m., but we also do some things on Zoom. We do our Sunday school and our Bible study on Zoom Monday night and Wednesday night. And people are at home, open up their laptops, open their phones, and they can get on and join in the class. As a matter of fact, I've got more people coming in that way than we had in person. And I think that's the story for a lot of churches nowadays. People have gotten comfortable with that. I am not really happy about the lack of people gathering together in a house of worship, you know, but you have to do what you have to do. And in some ways, we're reaching more people digitally than we would in person. But I still think there's a need for that. This whole pandemic and the whole digital age, I believe, has kind of separated people out. If you notice, anybody going out today to the mall or the library or wherever people gather, you're going to see them in their phones, the palm of their hand in front of their face, on their phone. I mean, it's like an epidemic, and it has been for a long time. People are so used to doing that. What it does is it kind of isolates you, insulates you from other people and other interactions and people interactions. children now, these teenagers coming up in high school and beyond, this is what they do all day. And they put 5, 6, 7, 8 hours a day on their cell phones, talking, texting with people, and missing an opportunity to talk face-to-face with folks. I think it's making us awkward when it comes to engaging other people, because we're so used to engaging them through text or through a phone and not engaging them in person, which is it's troubling to me. It really is troubling.
For somebody like yourself who is a communicator and has been a communicator for more than 45 years in several different fields, what do you make of people's communication skills now, the kids who have never grown up in a world where they didn't have a cell phone?
Yeah, I think it's a loss. If you talk to a lot of children, and I do, we have many in our church. One of the things we have put together to try to combat that is something called Top Dog. It's particularly geared toward young boys. Etiquette, grooming, and public speaking, those are the three prongs that we have pulled together. Because I've noticed that they don't really communicate well. We took out a group of kids to a cafeteria-style buffet luncheon where you go down through the line like you would in school and tell them what you want to for your plate. And several of them were almost incommunicative with the people that were serving them. And I noticed that they were, what did you say? Can you speak up? What would you like? And that's so bad. That's communication is powerful. Communication is necessary. We're in a communication age, and yet our young people don't know how to converse and communicate. And if you wonder, how are they going to get employed one day? They've got to sit down and talk to a boss about a job. And if you're not comfortable with talking to people, if you're not comfortable with looking someone in the eye across the table, if you're not comfortable with putting together your ideas and communicating and constructively explaining what you want, how are you going to survive in this age? It's really a problem that we all need to take to heart. Parents need to do that. I remember when my kids were coming up, they would come home from school, and like most school kids, how was your day in school? It was all right. It was all right. Yeah, we were okay. That was about it, and I got tired of hearing that. You spent 8 hours in school today. Talk to me about it. So I made them do a journal. Every day you come home from school, after you've done your homework, I want you to bang out 2 pages for me on your computer about what the day was like. Describe the day for me. What happened today, doing that day? At first, they were really reticent about it and felt put upon and kind of upset. But after the first few days, I noticed when I started reading what they wrote, they were not just giving me a matter-of-fact A, B, C, D. They were talking to me through their note about school, about teachers, about interactions with other students, about things that were troubling to them. And I found that a fascinating mind to dig into with them about what your day was like. And it really helped them become the communicators that they are today. I'm so proud of my son and daughter. They're very good, excellent public speakers. And I will say that a part of that was from having to sit down and analyze and be concise about a thought and putting it down on paper and explaining what you are talking about to other people. That's so important. And that's it with their child. I wasn't grading them. I was just wanting to hear what they had to say, what was on their heart, what was on their mind. And I didn't really judge them about it. I said, well, you know, the next time, tomorrow, when you do your journal, how about a little more color about the classroom? What was the classroom mood like yesterday in English class? What did the teacher say? How was she received by the students? How was she received by you? What did you get out of that class? And on and on. And I think it was very, very valuable. So I know I'm running on here, and that's what I do sometimes, so I just thought I would give you that thought about the need for all of us to be able to express ourselves.
It's very good to hear. Absolutely. Jerry, want to talk about the moment when you knew you wanted to be in the communications field. When did that dawn on you?
You know, I was going to Chapman College out in Orange, California. I'm from Youngstown, Ohio, as a matter of fact, and grew up there on the east side of town and spent a year at Youngstown State University. And then I had an uncle out there in California who came back to visit us. He was a very successful architect. And he'd come back into town to buy his sister a home. And I was really taken with this man. I had known him coming up, but I kind of lost track of him over time. But long story short, he said, "Hey, Jerry, why don't you come out to the West Coast? You can enroll in a college out there. There's not a whole lot for you here in Youngstown. Why don't you come on out?" Anyway, I enrolled, I moved there, lived with him, moved on campus at Chapman College. And there I took some literature classes, English classes. I always enjoyed writing because I used to have to write while I was there at college. I would write back home, write letters to my mother and my siblings about what was happening out on the West Coast. And I enjoyed writing, and I got good grades in all of that. Well, there was a radio station at Chapman College. It was the college station. I was walking down a corridor. I hadn't been on campus more than 2 or 3 days. And I heard this jazz music coming down one of the corridors. And I'm a jazz lover, so I said, "Well, let's see what this is." So I walked down the corridor and turned the corner, and there was all of this glass on one of the walls, and behind it were two college students on microphones. They were dressed in tie-dye gear. This was back back in the late 60s, early 70s. And they were on the radio, and I thought, wow, how cool is that? They're on the radio and spinning music, and I enjoyed what I was seeing there and hearing there. I stayed at Chapman a year, and then I moved back to Youngstown and re-enrolled in Youngstown State. And there was an experimental broadcast training program that had just started for minority students. They were trying to get more minorities into the broadcast business, radio, TV. And so I took the class. And out of that, I got a part-time job at a radio station in Youngstown. It was a daytimer. As you know, daytimers were when the sun goes down, your signal went off. So it was on during only daytime hours, and it was a talk format, and they did big band music and beautiful music throughout the day when they weren't doing tradio and those sorts of things. It was like what eBay on the radio. You may have such a product at your station where people would call in with, "Hey, I got a nice lawnmower here for $25. Anybody interested?" You know, and you would trade that stuff. Well, anyway, I started out as a board operator. I was spinning records for some of the talent there. And my shift was on a Sunday morning. And I was spinning records for a jeweler who bought an hour's time on the radio station because he was a big band music enthusiast. And I would spin records for him of the big band era. And throughout the shift in the day, I'd have an opportunity to read news copy for the seventh inning stretch on the Cleveland Indians baseball games that were being broadcast there, or ironically, even the Ohio State football games, the halftime. I was doing rip and read. Back then, you know, news copy was on a teletype machine, and you ripped it off the machine, and you read the copy there. And I was able to, from that, able to go full-time in their newsroom, which was a pretty fair size for a small station. There was about four or five of us in the newsroom working different shifts. And I had a couple of beats that I had to do, city council and the school board. And I just learned by doing. I had some great mentors. Some of the people that I was working around had been in the business a long time. They were teaching me different things about how to do an interview, how to get the best sound bites and all of that stuff. And I learned from them that way. Stayed a couple years at WBBW radio there in Youngstown and got a call one day from WBNS radio. I don't even know who referred my name to them. But they gave me a call and said, hey, would you be interested in coming down here and taking an interview with us? We're looking for a guy. We're looking for another news reporter. And I came to Columbus, did the interview. It was interesting how the news director brought me over to his house after picking me up at the airport. Do you know they flew, the Wolves flew one of their Cessna planes to Vienna Airport in Youngstown to pick me up? And this is radio. And flew me down to Columbus. And he met me at the airport and took me over to his house. And I was introduced to his wife and children. And I was sitting there, and he tossed a notepad to me and a pencil. He said, I'm going to see if you got any writing skills. I'm going to give you some elements to a robbery and write a story for me. So he gave me a sketch of what this robbery was about. And I sat there, and about 3 minutes later, I had a story for him. He said, all right, that looks pretty good. Let's go downtown and see what you sound like on the air. Because I hadn't sent any demo tapes or anything to anybody there at BNS Radio. We went downtown, and I auditioned on air there. Well, not on air. I did a demo tape. And then I left. He said, thanks very much. We'll let you know if we're interested in you. So they took me back to Youngstown, and about a week later, I get a phone call from him, and he said, hey, Jerry, we'd like to offer you a job. Would you be interested in moving to Columbus? And, of course, I was. I was very excited about it, scared, because I had never really been out of town except for that year at Chapman College. I didn't know what I was going into. I think I was 22, 23 years old at that time when I got that job at BBW and then moved to Columbus here. And I enjoyed working there for 6 years, and then I went over to the TV side, and that was about 1980. At first, my first interview at the TV station, the boss said, I don't know, you don't have any TV experience. We can't hire you, but thanks for coming in. And I felt a little, rejected. Of course you do, and dejected, which is something that I tell young people who aspire to be in broadcasting or any other field. Don't let rejection kill you and kill your spirit and throw you off. That's just one door that may have closed in your face. There are several others that might open up for you. Just don't stop knocking on them, given an opportunity. Anyway, I went back to the radio station and I said to myself, I am going to continue to brush up on my skills. I'm going to be the best voice that they've heard at BNS TV. And I'm going to get the job the next time. This is me thinking to myself. That news director moved on later that year, and I went back to the TV station and interviewed with the new news director. And he, by chance, was listening on the radio mornings, morning drive. I was doing morning drive at WBNS radio. And he said, I listen to you when I come into work every morning, and I like the way you put together stories. I like your whole narrative. I'm going to give you a shot. And that's all it took, a shot. And I tell young people, once you get in the door, you're in the door. Make the best of that. Make the best of that first opportunity, because you don't know where it's going to lead for you. And don't be upset because it might not pay what you wanted it to pay when you started out. Everybody wants to start out as an anchor now. Everybody wants to start out on top. I started out working the worst shifts at both of the radio stations I worked at before I went to TV. The worst shifts, and for the worst pay. And when I first started there at Channel 10, it was a little better, but it wasn't that much better than what I was making in radio. But I was making progress. And little by little, year by year, things started happening for me. More opportunities came my way. More story opportunities came my way. And it got me to where I was working as the weekend news anchor. This was back in early 80s. Ed Bradley was the CBS Evening News anchor on Sundays. and it would be the local news followed by the CBS News, and two beards on TV, me and him. I enjoyed that period of time for me, working those weekends in the news business. And I was enjoying an active church life. When I came to Columbus, I found a church that really fulfilled my desires. I had just gotten married before we moved to Columbus, and we were starting our life together there. And so God has been a part of my life for all of my adult life. And I was a deacon, then a minister, then an ordained elder, and I served under the pastor there for 30 years while I was working in radio and television. And all of that was part of my life. And then 11 years ago, we decided to open our own ministry and start our own church. So I'm kind of jumping around here with different things, but the narrative that I wanted to, you know, try to lay out there was God was all along in that whole journey for me. I did not forsake my church life or my professional life. As a matter of fact, when I got tired of working weekend nights on the anchor desk, and I came off of it. I voluntarily pulled myself off because I wanted to be at home with my family on the weekends, and I also wanted to attend church. Some of my co-workers thought I was crazy. Man, you're giving up an anchor job for a general assignment? And I felt like this, you know, if I'm good enough to anchor on the weekends, I'll be good enough to anchor during the week. Well, that was true, but it was 8 years before I was able to get on during the weekday, and I started working the morning shift. I was up at 3 o'clock in the morning to be in the station by 4:30 to be on the air at 5, and I worked that for 5 years, and then moved to the noon newscast with Andrea Camburn. And we worked the noon, and then I got to 5:30. We were doing those two newscasts together. And then Dave Kaler retired, and I got to 5, 6, and 11 and with Andrea. And we worked together for, oh, goodness, maybe 12, 13, 14 years together as an anchor team before she retired and moved out to California. And I stayed on as the evening anchor. So, you know, it was just a progression of things, and I've been blessed. This is the one and only TV station I've ever worked for. Most times, to move up, you got to move out and move around. And that's usually the history for most people in this business. They move from one market to the next to move up. But I was just blessed not to have to do that. And I was able to travel the world from Channel 10, much more than some network guys were able to do. So I'm very thankful for all of that.
It's a very interesting story. You know, Jerry, you talked about being recruited back at Youngstown because there were not enough minorities in broadcasting. Being an African-American, coming into Columbus, Ohio television back in 1980 before cable really was even a thing, three channels, very important. Did that ever matter? Did you ever see that reflected in the promotions you got or didn't get? Or the treatment you got or didn't get in your 39 years at WBNS television?
I will say that sometimes when I would get on a story and they had heard me on the telephone calling in to set up an interview, that they didn't know what I looked like when I called them. And when I got in the room, some were surprised that this was a black reporter interviewing me. A lot of the times I had a black photographer with me, Ron Johnson. We called him RJ, one of the most talented, creative videographers I ever had an opportunity to work with, and who I credit with helping me pull together a career in this business, helping me develop a style and a way of doing stories. He was just incredible for me. But when you see two black guys coming into a room, you know, there's some of that. So I probably had some slights. Not probably, I have had slights. I've had people not want to do an interview with me for whatever reason they wanted to say, but I felt that for some of that it was racial. But thank God that I was working for a station that really didn't see my color. They saw my talent. They saw my ability. They saw the fact that I could tell a story. And I appreciated that from that day to this. When I retired from Channel 10, I could look back with a lot of gratefulness and gratitude and a good feeling about how many opportunities were afforded to me by a news station that didn't see my color but saw my skill. So those things are going to happen. Now that I'm out of the business, I've been out 3 years now, and ironically, I still get, you know, recognized on the street and stuff, and I always think that's nice. I owe it to anybody who identifies me as somebody that they knew on TV to greet them and to have a conversation if that's what they want, and just be nice, because they were nice to me. You know, I would tell people, you know, if you don't watch, I don't eat. You know, my ratings weren't good. If I was a talent that people didn't want to watch on TV, they wouldn't have kept me for all those years. And I owe it to the viewers. We serve viewers. You serve viewers. That's what we do in this business. You know, we're not in it for ourselves. We have to make sure we understand why people are tuning in or listening in, because we're giving them information. We're giving them something that enhances their life. Is a benefit to them. And as long as we can keep doing that, we're always going to have a job. So I've always appreciated the viewing public. They've been a blessing to me.
Jerry, there were two interesting events in the latter part of your career that certainly gripped the state of Ohio and the interest, and they happened particularly at WBNS. Chris Bradley, who was a great meteorologist, he was on WSYX, which in Columbus, Channel 6 at that time, was pretty well known as the third place station. Hadn't been out of third place in a long time, but there was this guy, Chris Bradley, who people liked, and they enjoyed him. He comes over to WBNS. He becomes the chief meteorologist, young guy, and he develops cancer and eventually dies. What was that time period like?
It was hard. It was hard. I remember when Chris was diagnosed, he thought he had caught a really bad cold. And so he went into, I think it was the OSU hospital complex, the emergency room there, and they drew some blood. And they saw his white blood cell count through the roof. And they kept him overnight, and I think it was a couple days. And then they told him that he had leukemia. And it was such a stunning announcement. Came out of nowhere. This was a guy who was a runner, a cyclist, very healthy, energetic, ate all the right foods. I mean, he had a very healthy lifestyle. And he comes down with leukemia. And so he continued to work for, I think, at least that year and maybe a little more. It's been some years since Chris died, since we worked together. And he started going downhill, and he had to retire. And he lived on for, I think it was a couple years after that. Maybe not that long, but I remember him living after his diagnosis and retirement. And he was a Christian. He loved the Lord. And I would visit him at home, and we would pray together. And he would talk to me about heaven. He would talk to me about, you know, eternal life. He would talk to me about the two children that he was leaving behind. He adopted a beautiful son and daughter who, his son, Spencer, is now a freshman at Ohio State. And Maria, his daughter, I believe she's coming out of high school if she's not already out. And he was thinking about them. It was a hard time for all of us because we loved Chris. He He was such a community activist kind of guy. He was involved in a lot of different charity groups and a lot of. And when he came down with cancer, he got involved in the Komen Race for the Cure and all of that stuff. He was involved in these things. And when he died, it just left a void in all of us and for all of us, because he was a lovely man. And I think back on him and how he was sad, of course, that he was not going to continue to live. But his faith helped him get through all of that. Because, you know, that was just turning a page in his life. He was leaving this life for the next life. So I was just thankful to have known him as a friend. And I went to his funeral and I was one of the speakers there. And there were several others who spoke about Chris. So Chris Bradley will always be in my heart. I loved him.
You know, Jerry, he was an innovator in another way, and this is kind of interesting of the times that we are in. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, he was the first openly same-sex relationship marriage anchor on television in Columbus, Ohio. And you talk about his religious belief and you being a pastor. A lot of people have problem with that. What's your take on that whole situation?
My whole take on that is this: God loves us all. He does. He loves us. He doesn't love what we do. If it's contrary to what he has laid out for us in his word, he doesn't love that. He wants us to change. I don't know what Chris said to God in his last hours, and neither does anyone else. I don't know about that. I just know that he was loved, and we just don't know how that ended with him and God. Don't know. We can be judgmental if we want to be. I'm not a supporter of same-sex marriage. I would never marry a same-sex couple. The Bible is different for me. It's not different for me. It's just the way the scriptures are laid out there. But I just don't get into an argument with people about those things. You know, I just tell them where I'm coming from, where I'm at, and that's that, you know?
Yeah, well, and Jerry, the other thing, and we've got 9 minutes left here with the legendary Jerry Revish, and boy, we're having a good time recounting some of these moments over the years. This one, I think, falls under the category of timing is everything. And in 2019, you announced in that summer that you were going to leave the anchor desk in November. And the following month, tragedy strikes at WBNS, and Mike Davis, who had been who was the chief meteorologist at that point, who had been there for many, many years, is arrested one morning on a child pornography a charge, and eventually ends up in prison, where he remains to this day. This was a guy you had worked with for many, many years, were still working with, had worked with the previous day. You had just announced your retirement, and then he becomes the story that you have to report on. What was September of 2019 like?
It was hard also. Just like losing Chris was hard. I worked with Mike Davis for my whole career there. And he succeeded Joe Holbrook as far as the main anchor. Weather anchor before meteorologist before he was pulled off of that to make room for Chris Bradley. That day, I was out and about, and I got a phone call. I think it was my wife called me. Did you see the news? I said, no. What's up? Mike Davis has been arrested for child pornography, and I could not believe that. I had pulled into the garage, and I just sat in the car I just was stunned beyond belief. Is this happening? Is this real? Was there a mistake? This couldn't be the Mike Davis that I knew. And we don't know people like we think we know them. Any of us. You know, it was the most tragic thing for him, his wife, his children, and of course for Channel 10. That was a big black mark on the legacy of our station. We'd never had anything like that ever happen at 10TV. And, you know, a lot of times when you have this addiction, and that's what I would call child pornography, people who are into that, they're addicted. And they it's an impulse that they can't shake off. And they use these elaborate schemes to procure that pornography, and they all think that they're never going to get caught. But they fail to remember that there are law enforcement from the local, the state, the national level are constantly on the lookout for pornographers and child porn consumers, if I could use that word, on the internet. And I believe that the county sheriff's office, its sex enforcement, I can't really call what the name of the unit was, found they got a hit on him. And they just watched his moves. And then he was on vacation the week before his arrest. He and his wife had had a wonderful vacation out in the West. They had driven through many different cities, states, and they enjoyed themselves. And the Upper Arlington Police Department was, which was the local authority because he lived in that area, was waiting for him to come back into town. And when they saw him on TV, back on his job, the next morning, I believe it was very, very early in the morning, 3, 4, 5 o'clock in the morning, they knocked on his door and arrested him in his pajamas and brought him down to the Franklin County Sheriff's Office, and they booked him. It was just from that day to this, it has been an awful thing because he was an incredible talent, very skillful. Sometimes when we had breaking news with the weather, we had sustained coverage, Mike Davis would be on the air for 3 or 4 hours straight following a tornado warning all the way from the beginning of it until the expiration and stay lucid and have you interested and informed throughout that time. And that was all like flying without a net. You had to just stay on the air and pull together the information that you were able to get from the National Weather Service and people out in the field feeding you information. That's the kind of stuff he did, and he was excellent at it. Written books. So it was just, it was a complete tragedy to see that happen. And, you know, I think he was about 60 when he got arrested, so he was not that far away from retirement himself. So it was sad.
Jerry, being his colleague for so many years, as you say, and having an admiration for his work, after his arrest to this point, have you spoken with him or been to visit him in prison?
No. No, I haven't. You know, I just haven't. I remain upset with Mike for letting his life slip away like that. You know, that was a really horrible self-inflicted injury for him, one that I don't think he could recover from to stay in this business, even if he moved to another state. You know, this would follow him. I felt really bad about that. And you know, I wondered, what am I going to talk to you about? So, no, I haven't had any conversation with him.
Are you able to forgive that issue? Child pornography. That's such a difficult one.
Yeah. I forgive him as a person. Of course I do. You know, we've got to. We've got to forgive each other. You know, we don't forgive. God is not going to forgive us, including child pornographers, including serial killers, you know. On death row, someone could have a change of heart and say, Lord, forgive me for my sins. I accept you as my Lord and Savior. But you know, they can be saved on death row. They can make it into heaven from death row. We can't be the judge and jury on people. That's God's business. So I owe it to forgive him for what he did. It was awful. Anytime you're talking about exploiting children and collecting tens of thousands of images of them and passing them around like they're poker chips, is awful. It's awful. And that wasn't the Mike that I knew. And so my hope is that while he is yet getting ready, he's probably going to be coming out of here in another year or two. He got a 4-year sentence. That he's able to pull his life back together and move on.
Would you speak to him if he called you?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah. I would have a conversation with Mike. You know, I think he was just so horribly embarrassed by all this that had happened in his life. I don't think he wanted to talk to really anybody. I think we had tried, even as news people, had tried to interview him, even after, while he was awaiting sentence and after sentence, and he never gave an interview. I don't think he's given an interview since at all to anybody, so... That's the way that is now.
Jerry, two quick questions before we wrap this up. Why did you retire in 2019? Why was that the time?
It was 45 years in the business. I had turned 70. And I figured, hey, what else is there left to do here in this thing? I didn't want to die on the anchor desk. You know, that was a big, big part of my life. But I wanted to have my life back. And I do. You know, I have, these are days without deadlines, and I'm happy about that. And I am enjoying my wife, my kids and grandkids. I'm able to travel and do the things that I want to do. And I have a second career, so to speak. I was bivocational by having a church at the time I was working in TV, and now I just have the church. And it's very rewarding, very helpful. I'm in a satisfying. I serve on a couple of different boards around town. You mentioned that I'm a chaplain with the Franklin County Sheriff's Office. So my life is full, and I'm very thankful for that.
When you're on the air 45 years in a market like Columbus, back before cable, back before internet, when it was three channels, people are going to remember you when you have that kind of career. When they look back on Jerry Revish, how do you hope they remember you?
That he was... a decent man, that he served his community well, that he was kind, that he made a difference.
I don't think anybody will have trouble saying that at all. And Jerry, this is the first time you've been on the show, but we did not get a chance to talk about the ministry, which I wanted to do, being a chaplain, and a lot of other things from the television career. So you got to promise me that at some point you'll come back with us.
I will, Scott. I certainly will. And it was a joy talking with you, and thank you for putting up with my rambling. I don't like to talk at length like that. You know, I'm a newsman. I should be able to do it all in sound bites, but you gave me the room today to be able to just freewheel and express myself, and I thank you for that.
We enjoyed. Happy Thanksgiving, Jerry Revish. Thank you, Jerry.
Thank you, Scott.
Bye-bye. The legendary Jerry Revish. Boy, was that revealing. Hey, we're coming back for more. Don't go anywhere.
I was in hiding. How come we didn't get the kid? He's, ladies and gentlemen, I found this little German comic, and I think he...